When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bingetown TV. Our coverage of 1899 rolls on. We'll be covering episodes 5 and 6. So once again, early episode warning. If you have not watched both episodes, don't listen to this podcast. Go back and watch both, then come back before you start 7 and 8. So you're on the same page as us. Episode 5 is What the Calling. Episode 6, The Pyramid. Just... two, again, fantastic fucking episodes. I feel like every time I watch one, I want to just talk to every person I've ever met in my entire life and just send out a mass text to all of my contacts. So I will let someone else take the floor, then we'll circle back to me, and then we'll do our same old song and dance of not taking things chronologically, just trying to tact maybe smaller bits, which, you know, inform further conversation, which then eventually we try to get to everything.
I'll jump in really quick here. I'm trying to go back and remember. I believe I watched Dark season 1 and 2, didn't have a season 3 out yet, and then rewatched 1, 2, and 3 as 3 came out. But it was before the podcast, and I can't remember another show that has had me like thinking this much, and I'm just so confused slash have just so many ideas, and I'm just trying to remember if Dark was like that in the same way, where you really just don't know what the heck is going on. And like, I mean, we obviously have our theories, but I'm fully expecting the next 2 episodes to finish the season off to just blow my freaking mind to the max. Where we were joking about when I was on episode 1 and 2, we were saying, oh, we have these cute theories and it's going to blow it out of the water by the end. Well, maybe the institution thing isn't far off. I think we're getting kind of there, but a lot, you know, but it's just going to keep getting crazier and crazier, and I'm ready for it. But it's been a while since I've been like this confused and thinking this much on a show.
Yeah. It's almost intimidating to have the podcast and try and convey what we think was going on the screen, because we could all have such different interpretations of this insane stuff that we just saw. Mm-hmm. This escalated way beyond my expectations for 6 episodes deep. I don't think Dark even escalated to this level.
Dark is
wide scope, and this is easier to make the pacing quick because we are isolated to a ship, plus wherever the father is. But these episodes just destroyed me. I don't even know what to think right now. We missed some easy things. We were very close with some of the bigger things, like you mentioned about the asylum. Very close if this boils down to just complete experimentation. But I don't know. I'll hand it over to B-Toms because he hasn't had a chance to speak on any of the first 4. So if you could just give us a little bit of, because B-Toms is new to this. He's never seen Dark and he just went in blind. And so B-Toms, what do you think so far?
Thank you for the intro. Yeah, I haven't seen Dark, so I guess stylistically just this storytelling is new to me, and it's a lot. I am fully overwhelmed. I am questioning everything about the reality. But it's good. It really is good. It's captivating. It's just like a thriller through and through. I'm constantly on the edge of my seat. I think the acting is superb, like the way they transition from language to language. I hope you guys have discussed that. It's just like very impressive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bilingual people that are acting, so that's just really cool. But it's, yeah, like Jimmy, you were kind of getting at, it's been a while since I've been so engrossed and like really actively trying to theorize and rationalize what's going on in the TV show. And, you know, I'm captivated, honestly. Yeah. It's just very unique and it's cool. Luke, like you said, it's kind of isolated to this ship scenario, but I think we're about to blow the world wide open. I think we're about to get a lot more of what's going on off of the ship. And hell, we might even find out we've never been on a ship in the timeline that we're viewing here. So many questions. And I do apologize in advance if I repeat anything that you guys covered in the first 4 episodes. Again, I have not been able to listen to the first 2 episodes of coverage here. So, but yeah. Thumbs up.
Yeah, we've been pounding through these first couple episodes just to make sure we get them out for you guys when this season drops. And Brian, we did give you a shout out early on the pod because it's not that you didn't want to watch Dark. It's because yeah. You were doing it for the pod, man. You were doing it for the pod because we wanted to do Rooks and Vets. I don't know if we're ever going to fully be able to say, like, gosh, should we really take it off the table and let Brian watch? But eventually you're going to have to watch, man.
I want a podcast coverage. I've been thinking about it, too. I think a season-by-season coverage might be the only thing that's appropriate because, like, 30 episodes is so much.
Six-hour coverage per season.
Yeah, right.
Yes,
we can visit and talk about it after this season and see kind of like how this goes and then think about like all the things that happened over the course of this season and think about doing all of that in one podcast episode.
Because it's similar, yeah.
Yeah, it might be a little tough, but something to talk about. It is really like I had said on the first episode we did of this, it's like the ultimate white whale. Like that is, if we ever get to do Dark, I think I could just quit the podcast after that. I won't. Don't worry, Jimmy, I won't, but...
Why are you saying it's just me? Why about Luke and Brian? They won't get upset if you're going to.
You're the boss. You're going to have to hire my replacement, bro. You're the fucking CHR or whatever.
All I can say is watching this show is not making it any easier not to watch Dark because this is fantastic.
And it's the same for us. We've already seen Dark and I already want to go back and watch it.
Yep, exactly.
Before we get started, B-Toms, I want to know who your favorite character and least favorite character is. I guess you have 6 episodes of material to work with. So who are you thinking?
I mean, I'm not a fan of Lucien as the French man. And did we get his backstory episode 5 that kind of all blend together?
Episode 4.
That was 4.
I think it was 4.
Yeah.
I think he has shown just a great betrayal of Jerome. We got a lot to go over. Lucien is my least favorite. That's the first thing that came to mind. Favorite? I kind of like the French woman, actually. And I forget her name.
These are good answers.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with her.
These are good.
Yeah, those are good answers.
We all kind of agreed, I think, that Lucien was our least favorite, and that that Clemens, aka Clementine, is definitely one of the most interesting characters.
Honestly,
she's someone that we don't really have her backstory yet.
I like the three girls: Mara, the French woman, and the Dutch woman, the pregnant one.
Okay, so I guess just trying to roll out episode 5 stuff. There's a lot of we get a lot of pyramid boy Daniel next level kind of shit. So I guess maybe to start with, it's next level, but it's still kind of boat level, I guess you could say, of just this. Once the boy ends up, quote unquote, I mean, he saves Mara essentially from the bullet. We get this sound and this bell tolling, and then everyone, all the NPCs basically, and a few of our actual characters just kind of start getting in a trance and walking around the ship. And this was intense because Luke and I talked about it on the last podcast episode that, we kind of need some deaths in the show. And then all of a sudden, right in this episode, we lose pretty much the entire ship, which was crazy.
And at this point, I was still going off lightly. It's the institution. So my initial thought was exactly what you said, Kyle. The people jumping off the ship are the NPCs that are just part of like the hallucination or the whatever you want to say it's called for these characters that are in the institution. So everyone who didn't get affected by the toll is somehow in the institution. And then all of a sudden I'm like, all right, the mom. But then it starts adding people as it goes on, because at first I was like, all right, the mom is hearing things. Mora thinks she's like, oh, please don't say I'm crazy. I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. I was trying to like list people that may have some kind of mental illness that could be the main characters and not the NPCs. But then the mom all of a sudden starts going crazy and she's getting ready to jump off the ship eventually, too, when they're tying each other down. So it was just a mess, but it was so ominous. I wonder how many times they actually choreographed the way these characters were jumping off the ship, because you have to find the most creepy way to do it. And I think they figured it out. It's like, it's not Tommen from Game of Thrones, because they kind of go forward and then turn at the last second, but it was pretty freaking ominous the way they did it.
Reverse Tommen.
Yeah. Reverse Tommen. Yeah.
Dude, I don't even have any guesses here with what the fuck was going on with this bell. You're sticking with the NPC idea, but I think it's more, to me, stuck as like almost weak-minded. And I know Crestor definitely falls under that category. And you can credit Mama Dane with being strong-minded and at least a little stubborn, so that could be why she resisted. And it could just boil down to the fact that the longer that note affects you, it eventually will kick in. Because I think Angel resisted at first, but then fell
into
the trap.
He was like singing and talking to himself in the middle of it, remember? And then he never actually... Go ahead, Brian.
I feel like the assumption is it overtakes everybody, but they just had the wherewithal to tie themselves down and fight it off. The one dude said that it was contagious too. So like one person got it and then it just spread like wildfire, or do you
know? Lucien's not trustworthy as a source.
Well, it was Jerome who said
it. Yeah.
That was just the terminology that they use. And yeah, he was just speculating too, but they all tied themselves down and then there was a scene change and it came back to them like, I think we survived it. So I think the assumption has to be they all got overtaken by it.
Well, I took it like, no, because the mom was being shown as like fighting her shackles pretty much. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you're going to be okay, mom. You're going to be okay. The other one seemed like they were just standing there. I thought it was kind of, I don't know if I'm fully on board with the weak-minded thing. And but I do think that makes sense to me where it's like, it was gradually, and again to you, Brian, like it was gradually probably going to happen to everybody, but I don't think it got to a lot of them towards the end, our main characters, I mean.
Well, to go back to Kyle using the word NPC, I'm starting to think that this is kind of like an Inception scenario, and these NPCs can be manipulated by the ship company owner or whatever it is. So he might have just been like, okay, it's the time in the Inception where I just want to kill off all of the crew and isolate the people that I'm focused on. And he just pressed the button and his NPCs.
And
listened.
We also have to think about the fact that you could press a button and some of them just disappear. Like yeah. They're just nothing. They could just go off the screen or they pass out it's like a robot almost. Like we saw the guy that, you know, spoiler alert, you know, the first mate ends up being a part of it. And when that guy starts annoying him, boom, he pressed the button. The guy falls over. There's a couple of times that happens. So it just seems like, they're just like pawns. They're pieces of the simulation or the hallucination, whatever it is.
What was your guys' perception of the first mate going into this? Because were you guys expecting this reveal?
No, I thought it was nice that it felt like he was kind of standing by the captain, but he felt like he was alone in that. So it was a dangerous position for him to be in. So he was kind of almost letting himself get dragged along by the mutiny. But I just thought like he was just throwing shit at the wall when he opened up that panel and started pushing the buttons. But obviously,
yeah,
he was doing all that.
I didn't
on purpose.
Really take it as like the first time they show him doing that, he's obviously doing a signal. And I didn't really take it as like that's a secret panel that you can send back to the shipping company. I thought it was like what Kyle said, where it's just like help pretty much, you know. But I mean, obviously, even when he's still playing the part, it gets to the point where hindsight, you know, where he's like, we got to get the kid. He's the contagious one. Let's get that kid. And that's obviously his only job on the ship.
Yeah, that's definitely a case of like watching it, I'm sure, the second time where you'll probably notice a lot more things about him where it's like, oh, that's a funny expression or oh, that's an interesting action by him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got, and then I guess a little part that I liked personally beyond, you know, obviously the mystery and the thriller part is nice. I like that we're getting this, like, the Olek and Ling Yi. So she obviously watches her mom take the swan dive off the edge. And she is kind of going against the tide of people when she's coming down the stairs. Olek, we've called him out. Very, very nice guy. Probably seems like almost the best, like, actual person that's on the ship. And I just like that they kind of have given them that moment with each other. And then obviously we get another moment in episode 6. All right. So
you don't even need the language barrier. Still love, man. Love,
yeah,
love beats
funny.
All.
It's fine. We have talked about it a lot that it's almost funny that they just keep talking. Everyone just tries to talk to each other in a completely different language.
But they seem to comprehend and understand more than I would expect them to. So I'm wondering if that's part of everything that's going on. Just the language barriers are blurred because it's like an inception or a simulation, or Mora is starting to think it's her dream. Sorry, I ran out of breath there.
So, I mean, some of them say straight up, like, I don't know what you're saying, bro. Like, and I kind of took it like the father is watching them and not that he knows they're going to do this, but they're almost just talking to themselves. Like they're out loud thinking, you know, they're thinking out loud. You know, when he knows Ling Yi can't talk, he just starts saying stuff. And same thing when Lucian's talking to, I think he's talking to Ling Yi at one time as well. Like when there's the language barrier, if it was me and I start talking, you see like the glaring thing over their eyes where they're just like, I don't know what you're saying, man. I would be like, all right, sorry. But they're just talking straight up. Like it's like they're talking to themselves because they just need to get it out, whatever they need to say.
Yeah. I think the scene in episode 6 with Ramiro and Anchor, aka Tom Marilyn, is that scene kind of clicked for me of where it feels like it's almost, they don't even need the words. They can just, at this point in the story, it's such high stress and like emotional things are happening that they're just picking up almost on the emotion and like getting the idea of what they mean. Like Ramiro didn't know what the fuck Anchor was talking about, that he was a farmer and his grandfather was a farmer, but he understood that there was something that had been weighing on him forever and he's letting it out in this moment. So then he kind of ends it with like, it'll be okay.
And he says, you're forgiven for your sins. And it's like very ironic. They're both fake priests pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so before we want to, I guess, dive more into episode 6, we do have some things that happen in episode 5. I don't really know which one to take first, but I guess we can take the fact that
Let's do the time bubble. We have to do the early time bubble because that like happens right at the beginning of the episode and kind of kicks into motion all these really fun plot lines. And honestly, I've been talking a lot of shit on the boy, but I think he turned this franchise around a little bit, especially in episode 6 when he starts speaking finally. Yeah. And I have a theory on him too that's kind of changing. I'm sure it's the same one because we've been on the anytime it's been about Daniel or the boy, me and Jimmy have been saying the same stuff. I won't get into that now, but I'll set the scene here because the magic cabinet is a very important piece of this, and that could be. If this is not a physical spot, like that could be the entrance into it. Cause that's kind of gets shown by the first mate later. And I don't know what was going on with the boy getting put there after fake dying, but the time bubble, this was crazy. Daniel tried really hard to make Mara not get to the cabinet and open the cabinet for the little boy. But as soon as she crossed a certain threshold, it seems like he activates the black mini pyramid, freezing time for everybody but them. Because as soon as they leave the room, like time goes back to normal. But this was like the next step up of this exponential craziness we keep getting episode over episode. This caught me by surprise. I did not think we were going here this quickly. What did you guys think?
It's here we are. Like as a podcaster, I hate it. I wanted to start off this episode by just being like, I don't want to say I don't know shit, but like. Mm-hmm. As this show's going on, I just keep thinking logically in my head, like, is there really any supernatural to it? Is it just like some high tech institution, hallucination, simulation, where almost like what you're saying, Brian, where it's inception, but it's more like technological, you know, where they're showing the parts of the ship where they're hitting the buttons and things are happening and it's not as much supernatural. But then the time thing, that is still like it could be both ways. Like it can be that the kids somehow use the pyramid to control this simulation. And Kyle, I mean, we are getting a little bit closer to the thing that you're saying. Like I'm not fully like against the fact that it could be like an institution, but the patients are in some kind of simulation where it's like virtual reality or something.
Okay, to clear the record on that, I'm not predicting that. I said that would be my least favorite. That would be my least favorite way for them to go.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like, I don't even know if I'm fully like saying that's off the table at this point. Like I still could see it. I could argue for it. I still don't think it's the best scenario, but I think it's there. But you know, with the bug, I'm still trying to figure out this damn bug. The thing that's growing,
material. We got to think of a name for that. That's growing.
I just can't. I mean, it obviously seems like it's the same material as the pyramid and the big one and the small one. So I just can't. I can't figure out if there's going to be supernatural to it or if it's all like highly advanced technological simulation, inception kind of stuff. And the bullet didn't really help either way, to be honest. So that's why I'm saying I don't want to say I don't know shit, but I don't know shit.
So let me ease your mind and say that there's definitely going to be supernatural something going on. Like that's just ease the me. Way these guys,
yeah,
these guys
I mean,
go. So it totally will be that. And a really important rule that I'm using to stop or help create some of my theories are that the dad wants the little pyramid. He said that explicitly, right, outside of the boat, meaning whatever's happening has to at some level be physical. And I feel like that's supported by the first mate being able to go in and out through the cabinet. I don't know if we're in a separate dimension. I don't know if it's, if that's just like a magic portal in there to a different part of the world and everything is truly in the world, but that's just like a rule I've been using.
The only thought I had about the bubble was that it reminded me of Wayne from Mistborn.
Yes.
Two. And speaking of, The Lost Metal just came out. So yes, that also helped me make that connection in my head. Yeah. With the bubble like that. So that was the only, literally the only thought I had when that happened was like, oh, Wayne.
Yep.
And it made me think of Wanted with Curving the Bullet, man. Just curve that bullet. James
McAvoy. Age a little bit there.
Shout out. I know. That's one of the first James McAvoy movies that I was like, all right, this guy. I like this guy.
All right. So honestly, at this point, we can kind of just continue with all of this boy pyramid stuff. The big thing that we get dropped here that is, looking back, I can't believe none of us really, we actually might have said it, but no one really came out and flag planted it, that Mara's father is the ship company owner. Her and Ike, Captain Ike, have that conversation.
That
yeah, about they finally are starting to come clean to each other about what they actually know. He tells her about the passenger list, actually pulls out the paper. She tells him the truth about who she actually is. Great scene, a lot of info kind of gets dumped on us, kind of flipped a lot of things around. But again, it's one of those things that it comes out, and now I'm thinking, looking back on every episode leading up to this, I'm like, yeah, that totally makes a ton of sense.
So let's go back to the people jumping off. And let's go back to this conversation. So we have the captain and we have Moore speaking, and we find out that they were both on the Prometheus. That's why he's freaking out, because he can't remember, she can't remember. He's signing off on the logbook. Obviously, the logbook was trying to get burned, and I don't know how the hell it didn't get burned, but whatever. But if we pretend like these aren't NPCs, are we saying that the Prometheus exact same thing happened, like the NPCs jumped off? Well, again, this isn't, I don't know, is this really a ship? So that's the problem. Are they just leaving the simulation or the hallucination? If it's really a ship, do those NPCs die and then they just keep recycling the main characters?
I think this is as good a time as I can insert like my overarching theory that I've been concocting here. I think the Prometheus was a real ship that actually went missing under the ownership of our company owner, whatever. Yes. It was planned that all of the people on the ship would die, but that they would capture X amount of people. I think that X amount of people are the people being spotlighted on our current Kerberos mission or whatever. So they were on Prometheus as well. They got captured by the ship company, taken back to either America or Europe to be institutionalized, brainwashed, whatever you want to say. Forget everything that happened there. And then just they're either getting incepted on this Kerberos stuff, or they were actually sent out onto another boat, and I can't really explain.
Like
a lot
replay
of
the
true
experiment, like yeah, we keep replaying yeah, the like experiment that over and over and see what they do. Like, is the end of the experiment sink ship, meaning actually get rid of the ship? If quote, like again, does it exist? Does it not exist? Or is it to find out if they will actually sink it with people on it? Like, is that,
yeah,
like he's trying to figure out how the brain works and how minds work. So I know that he's watching every move they make and basically taking notes on everything. So sink ship, does that equal just get rid of the evidence, or will they make that decision? Yes or no. Let's take some notes, or both. We know that the captain, he's telling the captain, who he knows apparently, like, is he going to make this decision once or twice or three times or never? You know, like on the Prometheus, did they have the same exact scenario where it said sink ship and nobody sunk ship? So he said, all right, we're done here. We're going to move over to Kerberos and see if they'll do it there or whatever I tell them to do.
And that is bolstered by the fact that Captain sees a million ships at the end of episode six.
Right.
Yeah, it's also interesting too with the like the specific characters that we have. We've seen a lot of them have that letter, and we still don't know exactly what the letter is. It just makes it more interesting that Mara's is addressed to her from her brother, but yeah, we haven't really seen the contents of other people's letters. I think that I really want to see the contents of the letters.
The only one we know is the
like
captain.
Some stuff now.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. The only one we know is the captain did say what his letter said, because he said it has to do with your family and your daughters.
True.
But none of the other ones, like you said, 100%. We've seen Lucian's name on one. We've seen the older lady's name. I keep forgetting her name.
Mrs.
And I never
Wilson.
Write, Mrs. Wilson. I always want to say Miss Franklin because of Mora, but Mrs. Wilson, you know. And again, she's interesting, too, because if she has an envelope, you would think she's a main character. And if we're going off the NPC thing, she was about to jump off. She was one of the last ones. And they and then the whole thing stopped and she was like, oh, awoken. You know, I keep waking up.
So she's interesting. She seems to be privy to whatever's going on. And was she about to jump and just luckily it stopped, or was she out there just observing the chaos because she was immune to it?
Like, that's a great comment. Woke. Mrs. Wilson's very sus, I think. She does say, the quote she says, I had the strangest dream when they find her, like, on the deck. And I don't know why it took me until this moment for it to click in my head, but don't you think she gave Maymay, who was Ling Yi's friend, that she killed that kimono that has the ship company's logo on it?
Yes, that's what I would say.
That could be a good connection.
Right, because she was getting her over here, unless that was completely separate and, like, Maymay/Ling Yi was someone Mrs. Wilson had just found when she came to England,
and
coincidentally. But
this is why this show is hard, really, really hard, because you can literally go into, say, like, my theory is the simulation inception thing. You could just say, well, Ling Yi's entire storyline is fake, and she just has the kimono on that has the symbol, and that's just part of the story. And Mrs. Wilson didn't necessarily even have to give a physical kimono to Maymay, because it's just like what she thinks the story is to get her on the boat or while she's on the boat. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
it could be fake backstory, sure. Basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Giving yourself a fake backstory, and we're seeing what we you know from her own eyes. The unreliable narrator thing is all over the place with this show.
And I mean, another little thing, that's the ship company symbol on clothing, like we've talked about a ton of times, is Clementine's earrings. I mean,
that's killing me. Because they gave
it makes it seem like he says that it's an English like investor, and you'd have to think that like he's not just like it's not just a shipping company. Like, you know what I mean? Like, anyone who's seen Severance, like they always talk about, like Lumen, like what does Lumen do? They can't just be whatever company. Like, they have to do a bunch of things. And it just seems like there's no way this guy's company is just a shipping company. So I guess
can you imagine wearing like Amazon earrings as a woman? But yeah, no. But like, I mean, the entire thing we talked about with her specifically, ever since we had that scene where Lucian says you could stop pretending, and then we like it kind of shows her face and it shows the earrings and she kind of like smirks, and then we're like, whoa, this girl, she's interesting. She could be a sketch bag here. Ever since then, she's been kind of normal. She just had like that relationship with Jorge, and then going back to Lucian and seeing what
Jorge.
What'd I say?
Jerome,
Jorge,
bro.
Why'd I say Jorge? Jerome. Jerome.
Jorge. Damn.
I'm thinking of the E or the J. So yeah. Or Jorge.
The E.
I'm calling him Jorge from now on. So, so her relationship with Jerome, and then going back and forth with Lucian over finding out that he's sick and this and that, and then going through her storyline with both of them. Nothing has been any, there's been no sketchiness again for her, really.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, nothing interesting either. She just seemed like, I like her, but she just seems like a normal, good character right now. She doesn't seem like she's anybody that I thought she was going to be.
They haven't really dropped her backstory, which is surprising, because they've dropped Jerome and Lucien's, and she was kind of paired off Gesundheit, with Tove this episode, and we got hers. And then kind of the only backstory we get is Clement just kind of rattling off her backstory upon deaf ears, assumedly, because Tove doesn't speak French. But she's like, I always wanted kids. You're lucky. So is that sus? Like, how she kind of found herself aside with Tove. And then there's this whole Tove is pregnant and the mother is saying she's the chosen one. Do we think there's anything there? Because if Clement is finding herself one-on-one with the chosen one, maybe that is sus.
I just
think
the mom...
Hold on, hold on.
That was a lot. Sorry.
No. Let's clean up what you're calling these people. Tova, and then you're mixing Clementine and Clements.
Saying Clement.
I thought her name.
Her real name is Clements with a like a
C-E.
Clements.
Yeah,
and we call her Clementine because we didn't pronounce it right in the beginning.
Okay, well, everybody knows who I was talking about. Clements and Clementine.
At least you didn't say Jorge and Jerome, so you're good.
Jorge is way worse than Clements.
Clementine/Clements. Okay, well,
yeah, and I think I'm of the mind that episode 7 or 8 is going to be her. Like, we're going to get her, and probably, I mean, Mrs. Wilson, I think, is going to be there too.
Right.
There are two people that we really, and I mean, again, fucking Angel and Ramiro. We haven't had like legit flashbacks with them. So I guess maybe we'll see.
Either.
Yeah, this is very true. So I'm just going to, I'm going to take a line, or rather a line from a scene that we already talked about, which is Mara and Ike, and they're talking about all of the revelations that we talked about maybe what 5 minutes ago. And I just think that she says that like, it's either like a loop or her memories are just fucked up. And I think that ties in really well to kind of one of the only really scenes I feel like we haven't talked about in this episode specifically is Daniel and the boy actually having a conversation in whatever we want to call the other dimension with in the mountains. And Daniel and the boy they kind of lay out that they're hiding from what the boy has already referenced as the creator. And Daniel says he won't find you here. And then he kind of gets mad at him because he's like, what are you doing? Like, you shouldn't have done this. And then the boy says, we've never been this far.
Mm-hmm.
Which
it's obviously
is
going over and over and over.
Yeah, it is like, boom, it's a loop.
But is it a time loop? Is it a simulation loop? Is it an inception loop? That's what we're trying to figure out here.
Yeah, I don't have the answer for that one. B-Toms?
Yeah, kind of another one of my burning theories is that the boy, Daniel, and the ship company owner are all the same person.
Ooh, that's hot. Okay,
so that's
crazy. I'm not sure I buy Daniel's, so then you're saying me and Mara were lovers. Like, that just came out of left field, and I'm not buying that. And
that wouldn't track.
There could be a million reasons why this breaks down. And it could be only two of the three are the same person, the boy and the ship company owner, or Daniel and the ship company owner, or whatever it is. But like,
it feels like the boy, it feels like the boy and Daniel are the most likely pairing.
See, I think, Luke, are we going to do this theory right
now? Yeah, I know.
Let's go.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Again, I don't know 100% if we're going to say the same thing, but when
I
Daniel
hope
gives his revelation, well, it'd be actually cool if we don't, because then we get two more theories. But if when Daniel gives the revelation saying, please remember me, you don't remember me, we got married 12 years ago, I love you, this and that. And then we get to the part that you were talking about, Kyle and Brian, where Daniel's mad at the boy and the boy's like, she doesn't remember. Like, I thought she would remember. I'm taking it like Daniel's the husband, actually, and the boy's their son.
Yep.
Is that
100%?
Okay. Yeah. That's where I'm going.
I mean, they happen, I guess, in the reverse order of what you said, but yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah,
because, right. I mean, I'm just saying, as soon as I didn't think about it until the revelation of Daniel saying, that's why I went that reverse order. But as soon as Daniel said, we've been married for 12 years, I love you, this and that. Then I did the hindsight thing and I was like, I'm pretty sure this, you know, because the boy hugs her. The boy seems to care that she doesn't remember either. So I just am going with, you know, they have a family. This is their family. And the boy is both of their kid.
Do you think that
that was referenced?
Do you think that he didn't bring it up in that moment where he kind of spills it all? Daniel, this is to Mara for purely plot reasons to not spoil the surprise.
Could be, or it could be like, and the kid is our son, and all of a sudden she's like, this is just crazy. This is crazy, because she almost shot him when he was like, you're my wife. Like, she was going nuts, and she locks him in the door. So I feel like if you say, like, and that kid is our son, now she's going to be staying away from that kid, too.
So here's a good time for me to put in my theory of what I think is going on with these loops, because it kind of connects to what you just asked there. And it's going to really be on the backbone of a quote that happens in episode 6 when Ike and Mara are talking about Mara's mother having died because she went through that whole disease or whatever she ended up having, where it basically had the degenerative brain disease where it made you lose all your memories. So I'm thinking that there's a chance that this whole experiment is to keep putting these people through an experience and have them remember it as like a way of symbolizing like curing this disease in the brain for other people, and they're making them go through this loop time over time over time until eventually they're capable of remembering it, meaning like the father would have came with the cure for the disease. And another piece of this, when they're saying, like, we've never made it this far. So I'm thinking something changes and Daniel is trying to quicken the process for Mara to get cured of this disease as well. So they change something each loop. And I'm thinking it's possible that maybe he kills Ada at the end of episode one as the thing that they changed in this time loop to try and trigger a change that makes like something different, right? Like kind of like the Magicians, where it was like the whole changing of like Julia going to break bills. Maybe Daniel killing Ada unites the Danes to make the mutiny happen quicker and it caused them to get farther into this loop. That's just kind of where I'm at.
And Kiartan is like, let's do this thing. And I see Brian smirking because he wants some Last Kingdom talk when he said the Danes.
I needed it. Unite the Danes? Are you kidding me?
That's all they had to do in the Last Kingdom was go in the time loop to unite the Danes and just take over Wessex. But no, I really do like that. So you're thinking that Mora right now has the disease and she's going through the test and the father and the son, if we're right, are trying to quickly get her out of it and like cure her?
I think that's what Daniel and the little kid's goal is, to make her kind of remember her life that she forgot. And it's possible that it could be a genetic disease, but I don't know what's going on because the other people have their memories. We're just seeing them.
I just think that this whole thing is just hard. Like, it's very interesting where it comes to Daniel, the little kid, and Mora, where Daniel like was trying to make sure Mora didn't get shot. But he also didn't want the little kid to get out of the cabinet. And then he got mad at the little kid for bringing Mora to the memory. I don't know what Daniel's motivation is, because what he's saying, it's too soon to bring her to the memory to try to get her to remember who she is.
Well, that's why
he's mad at the kid.
I think he says to the kid, it knows that we're here now, meaning like now he knows that the father knows that Mara's getting further in this process or whatever it is. Yeah.
So like he wanted the little kid to stay locked in there for the kid's safety purposes and so that it wouldn't turbo speed the process.
That question sounds like one that we cannot answer.
That's what I'm trying to, like, I just can't figure out Daniel's full, I could see like he's in, and I keep saying simulation, but obviously we don't know what it is, but say it's the simulation. He's in whatever they're in right now. He's on the boat and he's not supposed to be on the boat. And neither is the little kid. Out of instinct, if he actually is the husband, him jumping in front of the bullet makes sense. I just can't figure out, like, say if me and Luke are correct and the kid is the son, I can't figure out, like, he says, and the only time they talked in the beginning of the show was, did you find it, right? It wasn't her, it was, did you find it? And he said, and he shook his head like this, no. Right? So they're looking for something. But, so they are, and we were saying Daniel's bad, and we were saying the kid's bad, and now it seems like that's being flipped, and it's just something, I'm just trying to figure out the motivation for Daniel, where, like, is it too dangerous to try to bring her out? Like, if your theory is right, Luke, like, trying to bring her out too soon, is that too dangerous?
It seems like it's up to her. I mean, he says to her, this isn't real, none of this is real, you have to remember.
Right.
Like, please wake up. And also, I mean, that is, we've gotten every character that's had a flashback, that has flashed into a memory, that's kind of created pretty much the situation that they're in and flashed back. They usually wake up with Mara saying, wake up.
And that's another crazy thing, because she says, I know that I was a doctor in the institution. My father's trying to make me think that I'm a patient. So what if this thing is that she's actually one of the doctors and she's telling these patients to wake up, and she, and like one of the twists is that she's not actually like the main character of this or something. She could be, whether it's on the father's side or another doctor. That's I don't know why she's telling them to wake up.
I'm not into that one.
You know, I'm not saying I like it. I'm just trying to throw, I'm just throwing shit out there because I'm trying to make things make sense. Why she's saying, she's the one saying to everybody, wake up. Including herself, right?
Yeah, I mean, she also wakes herself up. So I'm not.
And who's
exactly
dead?
Sure.
Whose grave is that? The mother?
I would like that.
I mean, he created the institution.
She's buried outside.
And she's buried right there.
It says wake up on it, right?
Only in her.
In her. Yeah, when she sees it.
Only when she sees it in her dream.
Yeah.
When they go visit it through the portal, it's blank.
Dude, I feel like we have so much left to talk about that I don't even know where to go next.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like we, at a certain level, we almost kind of exhausted all of the high level. I would say the last maybe high level thing to speak about is going to be, okay, never mind. The last, there's multiple. So I guess to backtrack us off of Mara. See, like, yeah, do we want to continue with Mara being in this memory, or do we want to backtrack a little bit? Because we can
have
go
anything more of substance to say. Well, I guess not.
No, I guess more of just saying that she, when she gets out after locking Daniel in, and Daniel sends Ike back to his horrible, bad time, no good memory, she walks into the field and is yelling, and we see her dad looking at her, and then she like shoots or whatever, throws the gun, and she pulls the panel back, and it's the ship hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere. So like that was another like, what the fuck are they fucking doing to us here?
The dad's face reveal is in these episodes, right?
Yes.
Are we going to call it out? Are we going to say, let's go? Isn't that Qyburn?
That is 100% Qyburn.
I was also thinking, didn't we see him in the first episode?
It's he's shadowed. His face has a shadow over it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why I thought we saw his full
Qyburn,
face.
Qyburn, man.
I looked it up. Yes.
Hand of the queen.
Well, we know he's a shady guy, so I'm not sure. Yeah, he's shady, another fucking shady guy.
But I'm sorry. Her peeling back the paneling, do we just think that's
the I have
metaphor?
No idea.
Is it real?
Stylistic choice that they chose to go with to show that they're in the inception or whatever? Like,
but he sees her doing that through the camera. Like he sees the piece she took off.
Yeah. And like he's not hallucinating watching. Like the screen isn't passing the hallucination along.
Right.
I feel like what he's seeing through the screens is like a look into their mind. Like I feel like when she peeled back the panel, that is like her in the mindscape.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, but it's also like is she looking at herself from above herself also?
I can't.
Honestly. I
know. It's like the Truman Show, except it's like he has a camera in your mind, like in your dream sequence. That's what it would have to be, a fly on the wall in someone's own dream sequence, not their own point of view.
That's kind of why I respect these guys, because every theory I have, I can only take it so far. Then I'm like, what the fuck is like the last missing piece? I don't get it at all.
And then we'll open up the next episode and they'll give us like, you know, 5 minutes worth of something. And it's like, okay, well, whatever we just talked about for the last hour means fucking nothing because of this new bullshit.
Exactly. Well, let's quickly talk about the fact that she has her own dream that she has to wake up from. Okay. And in that dream, she goes through the process of seeing the grave, walking to the institution, going into the room that we all said, you know, 1101, same thing with the boat and at the institution that was in her flashbacks/hallucinations. And then he actually does show up in this, but this is not the real him. This is her dream sequence of him. And he's saying, you're asking all the wrong questions when she's saying, where's my brother? Blah, blah, blah. But then she gets shot in the neck, and then she's put into the room again. Wait a second. So is it not the dream sequence, or is it the first time she goes in with the boy that she gets kicked out? And she sees
that's the first time.
Okay, so it's not the dream sequence where it says wake up and she wakes up.
Yeah, that's not – well, the time that she like wakes back in bed is like – that's not the time that her and Captain Ike, like she captures the bug and like goes through for like that when they're all exploring.
Right. So what I mean is, which one's the one where she talks to her dad and he says, you're asking all the wrong questions, and then they shoot her in the neck? That's without Ike. Ike's not with her.
Ike's not with her then. Yeah, because that's when she like comes to and she is in bed and she runs out into the hallway and all the NPCs are still marching to the death.
Okay, so then, my goodness, man. Because so that's the first time she sees that place. But then oh my God, what's the order here? Is it the boy brings her in, she gets kicked out, by the dad. Yes. Then she has the dream. Then she goes in again with the captain, right?
I don't know what you mean by she has the dream. It's the dream same thing with the boy. Is it not?
The boy brings her in when he's dragging her while they're all. So you're saying when the boy brings her in and then she says, wake up, she wakes up in bed. That's all the same.
No, I'm saying that when the boy brings her in, that leads to her meeting her father, him saying you're asking the wrong questions, her getting juiced, her waking up, being back on the ship, and then her.
That's what I'm saying. Right.
And yep. So it's two times. Yeah.
Okay. So they are kicking her out of that area.
Sure.
And then she could just go right back in by just going right back in via.
Well, she has a beetle. Yeah.
But are we assuming the creator is her father?
Yeah. I'm going to say yes.
And if the boy brought her in and Daniel said, you'll be safe here, was the father real in that part?
I don't know.
Because who actually kicked her out?
I don't know.
That's why I was thinking it was three different things, because I was thinking one's a dream and one was. Yeah. Shit. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
This is weird for us. We're not usually doing this on a podcast. Like,
to throw like another kind of just can of lighter fluid onto our kind of mental fires, we get another very weird moment with Anchor and Ramiro after they have they bro down a little bit. Anchor kind of admits that he doesn't believe in God and he's just all doing this because his wife, he just wants his wife to be happy, but he's realizing that she's kind of fucking crazy at this point. And then they're like, okay, let's do some shit. Like, let's try to steer this boat. Really funny moment when Tom slash Anchor whips the books out and Ramiro's like, you're going to fucking learn how to steer this boat by reading like right now. Like, you're going to do this right now. And then they realize that all of the books say the same sentence over and over again, which says, may your coffee kick in before reality does.
But in English, and neither of them know what it says. They just know it's the same thing over and over.
I just have no clue what that could possibly mean.
Every single book.
Yeah. May your coffee, like, will you wake up before reality wakes you up? I don't know what that means.
That's supposed to be like a saying, I think, just in like the 9-to-5 corporate world life, right? Like, hopefully your coffee kicks in and you feel the euphoria.
Googled
it,
and the first thing that came up is fucking Etsy mugs and like, yeah. It's just a thing. It's a saying. It's a quirky saying.
But it's obviously a double meaning in this situation. But what that is kind of like symbolizing to me, that feels very dreamlike. Where it's like a trope, or like a very it's just like a thing in dreams. Like, you can't read, you can't like look at clocks and stuff because they're always changing. This is what that kind of feels like. Or it could be like a coding thing, if it is a simulation where you don't have to actually code in the books, you're just literally, that's like a coding joke or some shit. Like, that's my first two thoughts on that.
I mean, yeah, I like nothing. That yeah, I mean, I like what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down. I was kind of stumped on that. I did get the saying thing because I looked it up as well, but not fully sure what that could mean.
I think all it did was confirm that we're dealing with a simulation or a dream, which we already kind of were circling around, but it didn't really provide us any clarity with, is it a dream or a simulation or a whatever?
Yeah. And going back to what I was saying about supernatural versus technological simulation, I guess the bug could be supernatural. I still can't figure out what the bug, unless it's literally like a robot or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a localized time travel.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, I'm still holding on to that because I feel like everything else I've said has
I
been
love,
wrong.
I loved how the bug, though, when the boy was trying to get Mora out of harm's way, the bug kind of like turned the corner and looked for, like, he stopped. He was like looking around the corner and was like, everyone chill.
That was part of my reasoning for it, because it felt like, and then the boy even says when him and Daniel speak about, like, we've never been this far, it feels like the bug and I guess by extension them almost, like, it's been through these motions. So like, it knew when to stop and like get against the wall and things like that, you know? So that's why I was like, it's carrying, like, it can carry future and past along with it.
And
so it knows obviously, all of the possibilities.
Yeah. I was going to say it obviously is why the water didn't ruin it, but is the water real? So
yeah, also that. And I guess something we also didn't touch on with at this point, we might as well unload the complete clip with all of this high level. Are we real? Who's real? Are you real? Am I real? Just with Mara's dad's quote, when he says, people are oblivious to reality. They only see what they want to see, imprisoned by their mind's restrictions. All they have to do is shift their perspective to see the full scope of things. And that made me think that, like, yeah, like, is this all in their head where, like, they're creating the next things that happen because they're so stuck in this one way of thinking? I just, and then the example that I had written down in my notes was, we talked about a little bit when Mrs. Wilson ends up touching the black goo that we haven't given a name for, which is also a huge part of the opening credits of, like, my thought was that, like, she touches that and, like, thinks that it should be something that's, like, contagious and, like, spread across her, because Mara's dad is just holding, like, a rock of it.
Right.
And then he just turned it to dust. So it made it like he was just thinking, this is a rock, this is dust. So it turns to dust. And I just thought that was the kind of example that I thought in my head, was that she was assuming this thing was contagious. So now it is contagious to her.
I would think that if I touch it, it turns me into like venom or something. Like, that's, it's a symbiote.
What I wrote.
Yeah. And it seems like she thought the same thing pretty much. Like, it is kind of climbing up her hand. So
Daniel does say to Mora, don't touch that. And the captain. So it's it's obviously doing something in their hallucination slash dream simulation. Like, it's growing, and it has to be similar to the pyramid where it is a part of the simulation that maybe they can't control or something.
And it's maybe like the simulation's rotting or degenerating. And if we're sticking with the theme of they're in a mental hospital trying to get cured, maybe that's a representation of a disease, something like that.
So that actually kind of works, because earlier in episode 5, when Daniel's trying to turn on, I keep calling it like the electrical breaker thing in the basement, but then gets choked out.
Makes sense.
Yeah. He says, hold on, I have the quote here. I can't find it in my notes, but he basically says, like, if I don't turn this off, it's going to reset time. And so when it eventually kicks back on, maybe that's just the symbolism of, like you're saying, like, this, because it kicked back on, it started growing out, and that's how it resets. That's what he was trying to prevent when the co-worker was like choking him out, was that thing getting out of the breaker.
And he was also trying to turn off the tone, right? That was at the point where he was turning.
That
I thought
happens
he's the one who turned.
Time, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He says this will all happen again, I believe, are the exact words.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Luke, you think this metallic stuff is what resets the time loop? So if Daniel hadn't interfered and, like he said, I need to turn this off, otherwise it's going to reset. Do we assume that's because he's encouraged with the progress Mora is making? Like, we've never got this
100%. Far? That's cool, right where I'm at right now. Yeah.
I like
don't
that,
reset
yeah.
it. We're doing well. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, so yeah. And it gets eventually, it gets to a point where it like consumes all of it and all of it fades to black. And then we start.
Another piece of it too, is that conversation. You're saying the dad is dropping these epic quotes in front of the first mate at the end of episode 6. He also asks him, I think he says, how long until the transfer? He says approximately 48 hours. So maybe that's just what it is. It takes 48 hours for that thing to basically take over the full ship and make it, whatever it does.
Restart, right.
I can see that. Or it's B-Tom's theory. It's 48 hours until he transfers his mind into the little boy, and then the little boy goes into Daniel, and then Daniel's mind goes into the old guy.
Oh, yeesh. Gosh.
That would be wild.
He needs the boy. He needs the boy because that's the mind that he's going to go with. That's the body his mind's going
to
go
I'm
into.
I'm just glad I got someone to latch on to my theory, if I'm being honest.
That's the point of just throwing them out, is that someone else will be like, oh, well, then that, and then it just builds on itself. That was the first thing Jimmy popped up, or one of you two, was just like, yeah, I think we might be in a mental institution, and they're all like hallucinating, and we were all like, oh, well, that, if you think about it like that, then that scene makes sense this way. And it's like, okay, yeah, I see it. Mm-hmm.
That was the first time we saw the screens in 3 or 4 episodes. They give us the reveal at the end of episode 2, and then we don't see him watching again until this most recent episode. Mm-hmm. It's just, the whole entire thing is just, it's so confusing to think about, because the screens make it seem like they're like being watched in a simulation, I guess, physically. And then, but then, you know, you could go into the whole, we have, you know, if the world is like so technologically advanced, it could be what Brian's saying, that they're actually watching in their dream state as a fly on the wall.
Noting that the place he's kicking it, watching them through the screens, also has a window view of the actual Great Pyramid of Giza.
And it kind of looks apocalyptic at this point, right? I mean,
yeah, is that Giza? Is he in Egypt right now on holiday?
No, this is a separate pyramid, but for our reference, it is the Great Pyramid of Giza.
And I also think it's important to note that he has, and again, I guess I'm not a technological historian, but it looks like what he has goes beyond 1899 level of technology. There's some doohickeys and machines in there that don't look like 1899. Daniel has a flashlight.
No, well, that was cool when he has.
And the guy was like, "What's that?"
Yeah, that was cool.
Well, it's worth noting though, the screens he's watching look very like 1970s or something. I mean,
it's like literally like Lost again, Luke. And Brian, and whoever's seen it, I always forget who's seen it and who hasn't, but the screens look the same. Like, they look old school screens, but they still would not exist in 1899, obviously. Yeah. But we have machinery with flashing lights. I mean, there's a million things that you're just like, yeah, this is definitely not 1899. Yeah.
And latch onto B-Tom's kind of, and I'm sorry to jump over you, but trying to date the technology, something that I looked up because to jump to the complete end of this episode is we get the storm on the horizon. You know, Captain Ike is on a boat, like B-Tons had mentioned earlier, surrounded by other boats. And we get Jimi Hendrix all on the watchtower drops. And they've been ending all of these episodes with these songs that all came out like 1968, 1972, 1970, 1969. And there's no way that those choices aren't, like, everything that they've chosen in the show has a purpose.
So you think the father could be in the 60s, his time?
He could be Jimi Hendrix, yes.
He could be Jimi Hendrix, just shredding it.
But yeah, I just think that feels like it's important. Yeah, now I feel you there. Feels important. And I could
so
just
it would
be
an alternate reality to us where, like, some kind of pyramid exists and it's could be apocalyptic 60s or whatever.
Maybe. I don't know. It just feels important.
So I want to put this on the board now because we're getting close to finishing up the Mara specific stuff. I don't personally think it's going to be a dream or simulation thing, not because of logic, but because I know these guys know how to always make me not go with the existing theory. And if this is supposed to be a multi-season thing, like the level of realizations we got through these two episodes feels like season finale level. So I'm still expecting everything we're talking about now to be a waste of time in hindsight. So that's kind of why I'm thinking, like, if we can think of it, I don't think it's an option.
Yeah.
So that's why the simulation
except
is the dream
except
thing
except
feels
the
too
obvious. Because we're right on that, Luke.
Well, that's obvious. I mean,
are we expecting multiple seasons?
Yes. It should be more than one.
Okay.
At the very least. I don't think they've confirmed how many, but I believe that one of the writers on Instagram confirmed that there would be more than one season.
Sweet.
It needs two, at least.
8 episodes this season, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
So let's think about the fact, too, that Mora knows in her head, in her not-so-distant past, that there is a situation where there's nice green grass and a mental institution and, you know, her mother's grave, if we're correct on that. And then, really, the father's reality, and again, it could be that just where he is located at this specific point where the pyramid is looks that way. But if we're saying like the world is looking like that or post-apocalyptic or whatever, there's a huge time jump in between how long she's actually been in these loops. Could we be thinking like they're sitting in cryo or something for like simulations or inception?
Then the end of this season is just like a cyberpunk city. That would be fucking crazy.
I mean, I really like the whole thing about it. He's like, she says it herself that he's trying to cure some kind of like dementia problem. And it makes sense what Luke was saying that over and over and over and over again, we're going to wipe your freaking mind and then we're going to figure out a way to make you eventually remember what the hell's going on and you're going to break this loop. But then the again, just like Brian said, every time you think of a theory, there's something that's going to smack you in the face, because then why wouldn't he be on Daniel and the boys' side when they're trying to make Moore remember? Because if Moore remembers, then he would be like, yes, dude, we did it. Like, she broke the loop and now she has her memories back. That would be a W for the father.
So my answer to that is, if Moore truly has this disease, they all want her to be cured, but the father is not using it in a torture way, but like, he doesn't care about the kids and only cares about the mom, where they're trying to care about her well-being, because this could be seen as torture, going through these loops over and over physically.
So they're trying to get it done now because it could be hurting her or killing her if it's over a long period of time, and he doesn't care. He just wants to get results. That's cool.
Exactly.
I like that.
Yeah.
We do know that based on her viewpoint of him, that he doesn't give a shit about her or the brother, who we haven't even seen yet. I mean, the brother's going to have to show up as a game changer at some point.
Dude, I was about to stand up and scream when Daniel was like getting to like to the climax of he's the husband. I was like, brother. I was like, we got married. I was like, no.
Yeah.
You didn't want that because I would have been right.
No, I'm really happy that it wasn't him, because I thought he was going to say, I'm Kieran or whatever his name is.
Yeah, he was like, look at me, like, right, you don't remember me? I was like, yeah, how could he forget you, bro? And then it fucking wasn't that. I'm a little pissed. I don't know if I believe it, that he's the husband.
Neither do I. I do not believe that, because he's the father.
Ooh, but then she's the mother,
so,
too?
Is she also the
mother?
He's also the father.
Everyone is each other.
Nah, just the boy Daniel and the father.
Okay, so then Mara is her own daughter and mother and herself.
we can't put that face on the audio that Brian just made.
If you've seen Kombucha Girl, then that was the face that he made.
Well,
yeah. All right. I'm just. At this point, I mean, that was about 35 minutes of stream of consciousness trying to hit all of the like the overarching plot, like the structure that's really driving everything else. I don't know if there's any more blood to squeeze from that stone, unless someone has something that we haven't talked about.
I mean, there's plenty of blood to squeeze if we want to keep thinking of bullshit, but I think right. I think it's over.
I think we can go back and then, you know, scoop in all of our little kitties and our side characters.
Yes.
Unless B-Tums.
I'm moving on definitely from the Mara stuff. Okay. I was just going to suggest we haven't really talked about any of the Tova flashback at all. What's going on with the guy that she's been seeing?
I think that's a nice cool down after that rigorous
hit
workout we just did.
The guy that she keeps seeing is the father, who's also the son, who's also Daniel.
Get the fuck out of here. But it is interesting. I had said last episode that it could have been me being way too GOT pilled lately, Game of Thrones pilled, that I was thinking that maybe Anchor, like her father, was the father of the kid, and that the weird way that he was touching it, and like B-Tom said, like, it's a child of prophecy, and not to knock religion, but I know old religious cults especially can get into some crazy shit. Cults themselves can get into crazy shit, and it turned out this way, which we had talked about the fact that it was probably not a wanted pregnancy.
Right.
But this was a really intense flashback that I think, I don't want to say wrapped up, but I think it hit all of the notes of their family really well.
Yep.
Yeah. Even just with just her flashback, it kind of got all of them.
Their backstories are given us right there.
Yeah.
We got his scar. We got the reason for her being pregnant. We probably have the reason for the mom thinking it's a chosen one, because she's probably trying to just spin what happened, and only, you know, this would only happen to us as God's children because it's a special baby, and we know that she's got her issues going on. So I feel like it literally wrapped up everybody.
It also got their you found out what Crestor. Jesus, I can't believe I'm still doing that. We found out what Crestor promised her. It was about like leaving with Ada once they got to America. That was going to be their own thing. Crestor's scar was like a really cool moment, seeing like how he got the face shot. And yep. then the last thing that we got that I wanted to say was, oh yeah, and then also Kresser was now in hindsight being a huge asshole about saying to Tova that like you killed somebody. Like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah,
me?
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. Especially because it was confirmed that that whole thing happened, including the pregnancy as a result of it, because Kresser hooked up with the son of this guy.
And I'm going to assume when he said my boy that he's just saying like it's two son. Kids that are sons that are like 16 or 18 and they, right?
We're not saying that. Explains the whole weird thing with Angel. Like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
also,
okay.
I'm curious because Angel like immediately goes to Crestor's scar and it's like, oh, like what is the mask that you use? And kind of like, I don't know. And I mean, maybe at this time, and Jesus, is it actually 1899? People who are closeted homosexuals out of probably, I guess, at that level, horribly survival, like, could he just know, like, had a feeling that Kresser was also kind of playing for his team? It was interesting now that we know the source of the scar of that Angel, like, touches it, like, the first time they meet almost, and is like, that develops straight out of that. I could easily be thinking too far into it, but I just thought that was interesting.
Angel's an NPC, and the father went to Angel and made him do that to see how Kresser would react. But then we also confirmed Kresser's an NPC, if that's the right theory. So never mind.
It's just a side story. It was a side quest.
Yeah, it's a side quest.
Because, again, an Angel and Ramiro are just... what is their deal? Because like Jimmy had said when kind of leading this podcast off of trying to almost make a list of everyone who might have some type of like mental issue. Mm-hmm. Like Captain Ike obviously has some level of PTSD and depression. His family literally lit themselves on fire and died. Like you don't really just get over that. Lucien, we know, has some type of brain tumor at some level. I mean, Tova was raped. So I mean, the PTSD with that is Jesus.
Yeah,
terrible. Would they talk about the mother? Ibn has, I mean, it seems like some level of like psychosis. I don't really know these medical behavior terms, but she's hearing voices and
Alzheimer's,
is acting on just, them. There you go. Yeah. That, and I don't know, like, what are like Jerome, Ramiro?
Jerome could be war PTSD. Based
I could
on
take
his
that.
Thing.
Yeah, for sure. But Ramiro, Angel, I mean, Ramiro killed a guy, but
that was, Angel, yeah.
Seems like he's living a fairly pampered life, although Ramiro says he's just super impulsive and selfish. But is that enough to land you in type of some type of behavioral experiment? I don't know.
And we don't have his backstory fully yet if he gets a flashback. But there's, again, maybe we'll get more if there's a season two. But there seems to be a good amount of people we still need their flashbacks if they're important enough.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, also, Ramiro killed a priest, too. Like because he says I'm wearing his clothes. So that is also, it's like a double layer kind of thing, especially back then when it was even more so, like, you know, obviously it's still the same thing. Murder's murder. Yeah. But I'm saying you're murdering a priest.
What do you mean by back then?
In 1899, man.
Are we in 1899?
In 1960.
I totally had a thought, but I just don't remember what it was. So I had to get the discussion point and shove it to the back so I can make that stupid joke.
It was a good joke, so it was worth it.
It's not good form by me. Okay.
Final thoughts on Tova, I guess, and then we can move on to some other side characters.
Yeah. Tova, I love her as a character. I think she's great. I feel like I've been almost waiting for her to just go into labor ever since like episode 3, because she's in an insanely high stress situation. But I believe they said she's only, what, 7 months?
2 months out. Yeah.
2 months away.
Yeah. Which I guess isn't completely unheard of.
But she did show a little ow thing when Clementine asked her, how far along are you?
Yeah, I just, I like her. I hope that she doesn't, I don't even want to say die because I don't know if anything's real, but I hope she doesn't go out.
Well, they did say, like, I don't know if we fully talked about this, but we've gone through the theories a million times, but who is it? Moore or like one of them says, like, did they actually die when they're saying they all killed themselves by jumping off the boat? I don't know if that's necessarily.
Oh, Captain Ike says that.
Yeah. And I don't
because
know
I guess he's extrapolating that. And I'm sorry again to speak over you with the boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Having done the same thing.
Yeah. Right. I didn't know if he was extrapolating, like, the boy apparently didn't die, or like, this thing is all, they're talking about dream state. So he's like, is this real? Like, you know, obviously the fact that he's freaked out that when they go into the portals, they're like, this is not a boat. This is way too ridiculous. What is going on? So, yeah, you could take that both ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that the only kind of thing we haven't fully fleshed out is, I guess, Olek and Ling Yi. I mean, we've seen her backstory. We haven't seen his. He was playing it close to the chest about his brother in New York. Something seems to be there. I'm, you know, absolutely completely stoked to the max about them kissing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I'm at, I think, with those two. I don't know if I have more.
I don't have any more, I don't think.
Yeah, my only thing is I don't think it's a happy backstory with his brother. No. I think that's going to be his backstory when we do get that, is some trauma there. But Olek is, like you were harping on, like the best-hearted character in the show. So yeah, I was celebrating when he gets together with Ling Yi.
That was a W for the good guys for sure.
I think it's pretty surface level. Like, it's just not their like relationship, but I just mean like there's nothing really deeper than just them
right
going through trauma together and it working out. So
we still need
tragically
just have like a speaking of tragically, a checklist of tragic backstories that we're anxiously awaiting for. It's Olek, Clementine, Mrs. Wilson?
Yeah, technically, yeah.
Right?
Ramiro and...
Ramiro and Angel. Yeah.
And, yeah, Clementine. Yeah, you said Clementine.
We got, what, 2 episodes? That's 4 people, 5 people. I don't know.
Daniel, does he count?
Well, we have to get some backstory with him, yeah.
Yeah.
Did we get Morris backstory?
And Daniel Jr.
I guess we didn't get like a flashback for her, so you're probably correct in that. But we get a little bit more about her, of like what her actual deal is. Clementine, we know that her family or her parents at the very least are rich, some type of high class. Seems like there's more there, but it also could just be surface level and that she's just a rich chick that found her way onto the boat. I don't know.
Quote unquote boat.
Yeah.
Well, let's. I mean, if we're pretty much done,
yeah.
I mean, do we have anything to say about initial thoughts when you see them pan out to the multiple boats?
No. Just my brain was so fried after those 2 episodes that I was I couldn't think of anything. I literally just wrote because they all are saying it. This can't be real.
Yeah, I mean, I just took it like simulation, Inception. Institution theory, it's multiple like rooms and scenarios for different groups of people, or it's just popping them from one boat to the other and that's a whole new story. Almost like if you're saying Westworld kind of thing, it's like each boat is a different kind of story loop where like Luke, almost going back to Luke was saying, you change a little bit for each story maybe. That's all I got, really. I mean, because we know that Prometheus is similar. Because, you know, Ike was the captain still. Moore was still on it. That's all I got for that.
What I can't rationalize in my head is that originally in storyline number, in just like the first 4 episodes or whatever it was, before Daniel used the machine to teleport Cerberus away from the Prometheus, right? Like that's the last thing that happens at episode 4. What I can't rationalize in my head is either Prometheus, the one that was old, didn't go anywhere and it just stood there. So that doesn't really track with like sending different Prometheuses to that spot as like a ship graveyard. And then second is the new ship gets teleported somewhere else completely. And it doesn't seem like this ship's on its way to a ship graveyard either. So I can't, like, are all those ships in there the Cerberus part of the storyline where it's going to end up, or the Prometheus signal of like a different loop completing? Like I can't figure it out in my head there.
So there's 3 scenarios that we know of, I guess, where there's the original scenario where Moira and the captain are on the original boat, Cerberus or whatever, and they find the Prometheus. Okay. And they're towing Prometheus. Okay. That's scenario 1. Then Daniel teleports them to a scenario where it's just Cerberus with no other boats around. Then we get to a scenario where Ike shows up and he can see every single boat that exists. So that could be 3 different dimensions or like 3 different scenarios or 3 different whatever.
That almost brings up Ike had the line, well, Mara, is it your dream or mine that we're dealing with?
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that wrench into the scenario. Anything we said for Mara, this could also be from the POV of.
And coincidentally, when you're saying three scenarios, Luke and I talked on the last episode about the significance of the symbol of what is the triangle with the line.
Right.
And we were like, why a triangle? Triangles have 3 points. What do triangles mean? You just said three scenarios. We were talking about, that the line is like some type of like, the line is clearly it's touching two sides of the triangle. So like we were thinking of like, is it like symbolizing like the connection between time where like the, you can connect 2 points and you can travel between them? Is it the two worlds that they're traveling between? Like, cause we're crawling through that tiled tunnel. Is that tiled tunnel the line between the triangle? Is that what that means? Who can say?
I love it all.
I love it so much.
Just give me more. Come on.
I also just want to bring up, and this
you gotta pay for enough, more.
This this has nothing to do. Yeah, if you want more, go on our Patreon. Kyle will talk about it for 5 minutes on the Patreon. Patreon.com/BingeTownTV. But I was just laughing because Daniel gets to the point where Mora and Daniel Jr., the little kid, go down the tunnel. They go into the new world, and then it closes, and then he follows them, and he's like, damn it, and he smacks the wall, and he's all pissed off, and then all he does is pull out the machine and clicks the button, and it opens up for him. Yeah. I was like, oh, you don't need to get that pissed, bro. You just click the button and follow them. You know?
I love the little puzzle thing.
Yeah, I know. It's sweet.
I think it's really fucking cool. And I'm curious to see how, if Daniel seems to be a little bit of a rogue actor, where did he get his? You know, did he like rob the creator / Mara's dad? What is their relationship? Lots to spell out in these last two episodes. And maybe not. Maybe a lot of that will spill into season two.
If we believe him, then it would be the creator's son-in-law.
Yeah.
And what motivation would he have for trying to eliminate any memories of Daniel from Mora's mind? That's why I'm doubting the legitimacy of him saying we were married. That like just came out of nowhere.
I think she did say she recognized him. Hey. So like there's got to be something to it, but
yeah,
the son, the little son. Kid.
Yeah. And that's not the only time we've gotten that. When Clementine says to Jerome, she says, you look familiar.
Yeah.
So, and they kind of instantly have a connection, which is a little, it's not necessarily suspicious, but it is a little suspicious just because of everything else in the show is suspicious. So why not that too?
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely picturing this season ending with the opening scene or something similar to the opening scene of episode one, where the loop is completely restarted. And the only thing that's going to be consistent is going to be what Daniel and Daniel Jr. decide to do to impact the storyline again. And in that case, it'd be kind of cool. And it actually kind of makes sense to me because it feels like Crestor needs to come back. And like this would also give a chance for Ada's character to come back. Like
that's
all these
a great
people would
point.
Just reset. And that seems like the kind of fuckery they would end a season on.
That's a great point. Oh, because Crestor dies and then we get his backstory.
Yeah.
Very Westworld.
Yeah.
Very Westworld. And
everyone's gender swapped except for Mara and Ike.
Just watch
it's Angelina and Ramira. They're all fucking chicks. And
that's hilarious. My last thought was that when it comes to the father, I was hopeful. I was just like over hopeful, I guess, where I was thinking when he says that line that you said, Kyle, where it's like they just need to change a little bit of their perception and then it, you know, changes their reality and it kind of shows him making his pan out, and I was thinking he was going to be like some kind of reveal where it's like he's actually on the boat too, or like, you know, what the actual thing is going on and not just like here's the pyramid and this is where I am. You know, I was thinking of something where I forget what it's called, but it's, you know, how and they've done it in movies, TV shows, different things where it's like and it's just like a, you know, an optical illusion. Anyway, you're looking at something and you think it's 2D and then you kind of like turn it and it's 3D. Like it's just your perception based on how you're seeing it. And I thought he was going to like, you know, I kept thinking of like, how is this window thing working here? How is she smashing something that you think is the actual world and it's the boat, you know, it's the ship. So I was like thinking it, she was going to like turn and actually she really is just in a whole different scenario and she's just seeing what she thinks she's seeing. But you know, we didn't get that, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. The smallest little tiny last comment I have, because I just scrolled past it on my notes, is that when Tova walked past room 2102, she looked afraid of the number. I don't think that means anything, but I just want to put it out there just in case it means something.
Well, and I also go ahead, B-Toms.
I just want to confirm the two confirmed special rooms are 10-1011 and 2022, is it? Or 2023?
It's 1101. It's 1101, right?
You're making me scroll back. Making me scroll
1101
back.
1101 and 2202.
It's room 1099.
What? No, that's not Mars, right.
Unless I wrote that wrong.
No. It's either 1011 okay. or 1101.
I wrote that wrong.
Well, okay. Aren't there two rooms with shafts?
It's the captain's room. I mean, we haven't proven yet that all the beds don't have that, but
technically, yeah, right.
I cannot open this bag of worms up. I remember
every single shaft.
Put the cap back on, Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm taking it off for a second. Every single shaft only goes into the person's room's scenario.
Correct.
If Ike goes with Mora into the shaft in her room, they come out at the mental institution. Mm-hmm. If Ike and Mora go into Ike's shaft, I like that. Then, hey, like the boys, you know,
I'm trying to go.
Then they're at his old burning home house that got burnt down. So all of these characters that keep seeing their flashbacks, do they all have something under their bed? We'll see. That's all we need to see. Put the cap back on. Game over.
Okay. Game over. So yeah, that is.
I want to throw. Let me throw something out there too, because okay, we didn't say it. I don't even. It feels bad to end talking about it, but I think it's kind of worth mentioning. That was a really weird scenario with Lucien kind of explaining his feelings to Clementine about how he just loves her so much that he hates her, basically. Yeah. And it doesn't make me like him anymore. And she seems to be all about it, which is really lame, because it does seem like the Jerome and her hooking up is getting less of a chance. But I just wanted to say that that's part of Lucien's character kind of explaining some of his actions, but fuck him.
Yeah, I want to say that Lucien won redemption points for me, because he's just like, I know I have this terminal illness, and like, rather than put myself through the torture of falling in love with you and knowing what I will lose from dying, I'm just not even going to bother, and I'm going to accept that I'm going to die and save us both the trouble of falling in love with each other and having to lose each other.
He's a phony.
Yeah, he, I mean, listen, it makes and, it, yeah,
I want to say my dark horse is that Clements and Tova are going to fall in love.
Ooh,
okay.
Yeah,
okay. I love that. I could be down with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, either way, like the Lucien thing, I think his explanation makes sense that, you know, I hate you because it reminds me that I'm dying because I actually do love you and I don't want to get into that. But also, it doesn't take away the fact that he sandbagged the shit out of Jerome.
Yeah, that was all.
He's going off the whole karma thing. Like, oh, you know, I got out of it, but you know, this is what I deserve to die. But you know, yeah, you give us a little bit more backstory, but it doesn't make him any better of a person or character.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, good now.
Yeah. So that'll wrap up our discussion. That was the most open forum of discussion we may have ever had on the podcast. So, yeah, thank you for listening to our just complete stream of consciousness about the show that is completely fucking our minds at the moment. We're just doing this live. I'm throwing this suggestion out there. I'm thinking we're going to do episode 7 as a standalone, so that we can do episode 8 as a standalone, the finale.
Yep.
That seems like the best course of action for us. It does kind of stink that Netflix shows, that this show itself has to be on Netflix where everything gets dropped at once, because I could see the show like taking over the internet.
If
it came out week to week. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, even if it was 2 episodes a week, like we've been doing it, like the discussions that would be out there and the memes and everything, I just feel like it could literally hit the stratosphere. But that's not how Netflix does things. So that's not how we'll do things.
And they've confirmed that they will not change that in the future, at least the foreseeable future. And
if you guys can believe it, people that don't podcast love being able to binge at their leisure.
Yeah,
but my roommate is like, he's like, anybody who isn't Netflix can suck it. They do it right. They just drop it all at the same time.
HBO Max, watching House of the Dragon week to week was amazing.
For sure.
Okay. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. If you took issue with anything that we said, if you think you're smarter than we are, quite likely, please reach out to us. If you're watching on YouTube, toss a comment. If you want to DM us on Twitter at Bingetown TV, you can even throw it out publicly. We're actually recording this on, this is Wednesday night, so the show hasn't officially dropped yet. But if you still want to even just give your thoughts, throw them at us. We'd love to talk to you. We'd love to chat about the shows that we love. So please don't be afraid to reach out to us about your thoughts about 1899 and our coverage of it. If you want to find us on another social media that's not Twitter, Instagram at Bingetown TV, we have a website, which is a collection of all of our TV shows. At this point, we've been at this for a few years now. We have covered a million shows. We're probably doing Rick and Morty at this moment, too. It's about to come back after its mid-season break, so we'll be covering that. More shows to come in the future. So if you want to check out our collection of shows, definitely go on bingetowntv.com. It's just the easiest way to get all of them kind of, you know, batched together instead of scrolling through all the feeds. If you're listening on any podcast service, please subscribe. You'll get all of the notifications when we drop episodes. And we mentioned it, Jimmy plugged it earlier, but just to say it again, if you're feeling super generous, extra generous, patreon.com/bingetowntv, you can donate some money to us. We do have some exclusive episodes on there, like interviews and just kind of more freeform episodes of us just talking in general about our lives and TV shows and movies and books. So if you're interested in that, you can find that there as well. And thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.